Boston was shopping three of their perimeter players around the league. But one place that they engaged in conversation today was with the Utah Jazz, where they can do a sign and trade agreement where Jay Crowder potentially could go back to Utah in exchange for Gordon Hayward. Gordon Hayward would have to sign off on a sign and trade. Given the acrimony in Salt Lake right now, the, you know, the disappointment among their fans, it could potentially be something of a parting gift to them, because Crowder is probably the odd man out in Boston. I think his role is most impacted.
Now, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that I think they've closed the gap with the Cavs here, because I think adding Gordon Hayward's a great move, but I still think the Cavs have three outstanding players. But if the Cavs waver at all or have an injury, the Celtics are going to be there. They're going to be a much stronger contender to the Cavs with Gordon Hayward than they were before.
Well, the Cavs' number one target was Paul George, and they had a deal with Denver and with Indiana that fell apart at the last minute. When I spoke to a source within the Cavs when that happened, their feedback was, well, guess what? We're still the class of the East. That's the way they tried to rationalize it to deal with the disappointment. Now, what do they say with, when this Gordon Hayward deal happens? They can't just have that standing anymore just to say that, oh, hey, we're still the three-time defending Eastern Conference champions. Now the team that they played in the Eastern Conference Finals has added probably the second biggest name to move in the offseason. I spoke to a prominent agent who's been dealing with the Cavs throughout the free agency process. Yeah. And basically, he's talking to two people right now, Kobe Altman, the assistant GM, and the owner, Dan Gilbert. Question is, will Dan Gilbert want to continue to have that Jerry Jones type of role as the season goes on, or does he absolutely need to find somebody else in place?
And even with extra base hits, I think we wound up with more extra base hits than they did, actually. Obviously, they hit the home run that got us, but we had a couple double plays that kind of bit us a little bit today. And with runners in scoring position, again, it kind of rose up to get us. You know, when you don't get them with the runners in scoring position, sometimes it adds up.
Hopefully we're in the process of narrowing down what's been causing his symptoms, and then that way we can get him corrected, and I'm confident we're on that path. He will not be with the team tonight. At this point, I don't have a clear time frame for when he'll return, but we expect that it'll be at least a couple of days.
Felt pretty good. First couple innings, I think that was the same story 5-6 days ago. Kind of hit a bit of a wall there in between innings, and I got to do a better job of, you know, going back out there and continuing what I started with. Mentally, physically, whatever, I got to be able to get over that hump and make pitches when I have to.
It's just the way sports are now. It's the aberration the other way around, you know, for a player to stay with the organization for his whole career. The Jeters, the Chipper Joneses of the world. Ideally, you'd like that to happen. Unfortunately, I can control my own destiny. Kind of one of those things. If the organization thinks it's best for them, if I think it's best for me, you know, that's there's a lot of variables that go into it. Where there's smoke, there's fire. It's not, you know, completely out of the realm of possibility, obviously.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Welcome indeed to the Extravaganza, ready on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket, where we are Toledo's sports leader. Hope you're having an outstanding Thursday afternoon as we begin at 10 minutes after 3 p.m. Man, that was a jam-packed full montage to start our program, and it didn't even come with all of the things we're going to talk about today. Shall we talk NBA free agency? Yes. You heard a lot there from Adrian. Hey, Cushland, say his last name. I dare you.
Wojnarowski?
here's your mission, Cush.
Okay.
Producer guy, book Adrian on this program for me, please. I want to talk to him about NBA stuff, obviously, now that he has officially come from a Yahoo Sports to ESPN. He ought to be available for an ESPN affiliate like us. And I want to get him on, and I want to hear him say his name, because it drives me bleeping bananas that every single broadcaster, all of them, every show I've ever heard, Jim Rome's show, Mike and Mike's show, Lebatard's show, Russillo's show, ESPN Sports Center, Fox Sports shows, Yahoo people, everybody says his name is either like you just did, you said Wojnarowski, or they say Wojnarowski, as if Nowski is a given. There ain't no Nowski in the man's name. It drives me crazy. His name is not spelled that way. It's W-O-J-N-A, Wojnarowski. It's Wojnarowski, and nobody has ever called him his name by his name correctly. And I know he never corrects anybody because, well, one of two reasons. either Adrian is just too damn nice a guy, doesn't want to have to try to do this every time somebody says it wrong, say, no, it's Wojnarowski. Or he doesn't actually say it. His own family does not say it the way it's spelled. They just say it as if there's a couple of silent letters in there, and it makes it easier to say Wojnarowski. So they actually, maybe they people do say, or maybe his family does say it that way, and so he doesn't correct him because that's how he likes it. Or he just is tired of it. And so whatever you say, if you just say Adrian Woo, he'll answer to it. Pretty much just get the Woo part in, or the Woj part in, and he'll answer to it. But that, this is just the English teacher in me, Jim. I do this all the time. All the time. When it comes to mispronounced words, words used mistakenly in the wrong ways, it's just the English teacher in me, which I did for 6 years before getting into broadcasting 20 years ago. And it just drives me nuts when I hear people say, Adrian Wojnarowski, Adrian Wojnarowski. And no, it's not war, because it's not W-O-R. It's W-O-J-N-A, Wojnarowski. And I'm going crazy. Now that he's gone to, by the way, moved from Yahoo Sports to ESPN, raising his profile, raising his visibility on TV and on radio. He's going to be on all the time, and nobody's going to say his name right. And I'm going to punch radio speakers, my own. Oh, my goodness gracious. So book him for the show, please. And I'm going to let him introduce himself. I'm going to say, Adrian, please introduce yourself to our audience here in Toledo, Ohio. And he's going to say, if he actually spells says his name the way it's spelled, he's going to say Adrian Wojnarowski. So there you go. Little English primer soapbox for you to get you started this afternoon here on the Extravaganza. Adrian Wojnarowski, Brian Windhorst, and Dave McMenamin all talking about the big deal, Gordon Hayward to the Celtics, how it changes the balance of play. It doesn't change squat crap. That's K-E-R-R-A-P-P if you're scoring at home. Crap. It doesn't change anything. Because the Cavaliers are still better, and they're going to continue to be better, even with Gordon Hayward. Why? Because Gordon Hayward is Gordon Hayward. Good player, not LeBron James. Not a title changer. He's not Kevin Durant. Not a conference changer. He's not Kawhi Leonard. He's not one of the elites. He's a good player. He's not a great player. Or if you have certain levels of good, great, and then superstars, okay, maybe he's great, but he ain't a superstar. And yes, I just said ain't after correcting everybody else's English. I'm just playing. That's called poetic license for the purposes of effect. So a little bit on that, and we will talk a little bit more about the NBA. And you know who has been very, very quiet in all of the trade talk, Jim Kuchel, and all of the free agency talk? You know which team has been one of the probably three or four quietest in the league?
I'm venturing to guess that's the Detroit Pistons.
That would be your Detroit Pistonians indeed. Yeah. Nothing really going on. Really, the only question is about KCP and whether or not he's going to accept a qualifying offer and play out the season, or what's going to happen. Is he going to get a long-term deal? Nobody really knows where that is right now, and we're going to talk about it coming up at about 3:35, I think, right? 3:35, we're
going
to talk to David Fernandez, who covers all things Pistons for DetroitBadBoys.com. One of the great website names for the SB Nation family. So that'll be at 3:35. We'll also pick his brain about the rest of the NBA.
Yeah,
and the rumors, of course, that the reason the Dan Gilbert recruitment of Chauncey Billups to be the new GM/president of basketball operations in Cleveland, the longtime Pistons legend, of course, Gilbert's Detroit ties are long and well-defined and well-known, trying to bring in one of the bad boys, if you will, to run his team. Yeah, not so much when you're going to be that cheap and only offer about $1.5 million a year for a job that, according to most NBA analysts, say is usually a $4 million a year job to take over an NBA team as a general manager. So Gilbert lowballing Chauncey Billups, and now he is still without a GM, even as trade talks and everything else and free agency and everything else goes on, which is a little bit bizarre.
No, it is a little bit. I will say the only other Pistons news, and it technically might affect the whole question mark KCP situation, is the one free agent they did sign so far. And, of course, by the by, if I'm not mistaken, sometime today is the end of the moratorium. So all these little things we've been hearing about since this past holiday weekend, those can now be signed. It was Langston Galloway, 3 years, $21 million to come play for the Pistons.
Which is probably still overpaid. I've been doing that. This is a guy. Galloway is a 36% shooter from distance, which is not anywhere near where it needs to be, in my estimation, in today's NBA, when good to great three-point shooters are at least at 40%, and the best ones are up near 50%.
Right.
So that's just not good enough career-wise anyway. This is a guy who's, you know, and let me just say this point blank. It's going to sound really mean. It's going to sound really bad. But when you're signing guys like Langston Galloway and this is your big splash in free agency, you're in hell in the NBA. You know what I mean? You are in purgatory. You don't suck bad enough to get yourself a top pick like a Fultz or a Ball or a Jackson or one of these guys who went near the top of the draft. And you're nowhere near good enough contender for a star in free agency to want to come and play for you.
Right.
You're just, you know, outside of the playoff race, but not quite into the lottery phase where you're getting high picks. And you're forced to sign guys. And I don't mean to rip Langston Galloway, but it's such a nothing signing. It is such a nothing signing. It's a 3-year, $21 million deal that's probably overpaid like so many others that we've talked about. Not nearly as much, by the way, as some of the others. But you know, this is how, let's put it this way. Absent other moves, absent other pieces that might be acquired, for example, if they were to move Andre Drummond or something like that, absent something else, does this change last year's Pistons team coming into this year's Pistons season? Does it make them climb any higher in Eastern Conference standings? Does it make them any more likely to win a first-round playoff match, or playoff series, I should say? And the answer is quite simply no, they're not better. They're just a little different.
Yeah. 'Cause
he's just another dude. Good for him. Congratulations. Maybe he'll shoot a little bit. But you know what? They also just got Luke Kennard in the draft. He'll shoot a little bit. He's going to score. He's going to be a defensive liability, as we've discussed, but I don't think that'll be a forever thing. I think it'll be an in-progress improving thing, about Luke Kennard. But, you know, the Galloways of the world are just little pieces. A guy that, like Galloway, could help a contending team, a really, really good contending team, by being a key piece off of the bench. But on a team that's not a contending team like this, it's just another guy.
Yep.
And you know, Minnesota was just, you know, kind of another team. Minnesota, even though they had a superstar player like Karl Anthony Towns and a rising star like Andrew Wiggins, they're kind of Detroit-ish in terms of where they are in the Western Conference standings. What do they do to go out and splash Jimmy Butler? You know, you got Paul George going out there to play with Oklahoma City. It was a team that just made it into the playoffs and lost in the first round, but bang, here comes Paul George. Celtics came a little short, bang, here comes Gordon Hayward. All of these different moves that are being made make the signing of Langston Galloway, just in my opinion, just look that much, or that less, I guess I should say, relevant to anything, which is why I say they're kind of one of the quietest teams in the NBA in the trading and in the free agency period.
I'll do you one better, or I guess it's a sort of one worse. I'm looking at the Pistons numbers right now, and if you recall, the salary cap for this year is $99 million, right? And then you get the taxes and stuff after that.
Right.
This is not counting Langston Galloway, because that contract has not officially been signed. The Pistons are already at $97 million. Add Galloway's numbers, which aren't officially in it yet. Now you're over the cap, and then you still have to deal with Kentavious Caldwell-Pope.
Right.
So in addition to that middling area they're in, it's not repeater like the Cavs, but they're bordering on luxury tax problems.
Which is crazy.
Which is
for
crazy.
A team that is outside of the playoffs.
Exactly.
You know, and really,
it's one thing if you're the Cavs, whether you're winning or losing those finals against the Warriors. It's another thing to be in luxury tax kind of areas, which the Pistons, assuming they sign KCP, or worst case, somebody offers him a max-type contract offer sheet, and he has to sign it because he's restricted. Then you're in the same financial boat almost as the Cavs, but we're still talking, can they even make the playoffs? That's a bad spot to be in.
And here we are. Let's talk about Langston Galloway and his 7.9 career scoring average and his 1.3 assists per game and his 2.1 rebounds per game. Boy, there's the game changer. There's the difference maker. He's been with, this will be his fourth team now, by the way, in five NBA seasons. Just saying. Started out as a Knick, then a Pelican, then a King, and now, of course, signing with the Pistons. So, you know, I don't want to be mean to the guy, obviously. I'm looking for a team like the Pistons to say, we're tired of being in purgatory. We need to take giant steps forward, and we need to make bold moves. And part of that is going to be unloading some of those salaries that you're talking about so that you can indeed sign and be a player in a real free agency game that involves gathering stars. The Pistons, for lack of a better way of saying it, are completely starless. And that's mean to Andre Drummond, who's been an all-star, but he's an all-star for a different reason than we talk about stars. You know what I mean?
Yes.
He's a rebounding star. He's not a scoring star. And they don't have any scoring stars, and they don't have any soaring stars. It's just the way that it is. They're just a bunch of guys trying to play together, trying to build off one another, and they're just going to be one of the NBA's most boring teams, I think, and one of the NBA's really non-factors. They're going to be one of the – if the NBA is a handful of globetrotters and a league full of generals, you know they're clearly very much one of the generals. So anyway, we're going to talk –
sad but true.
Sad but true indeed. We're going to talk more about that with David Fernandez, the Detroit Bad Boys, coming up at about 3:35. But since you brought up luxury taxes and since you brought up the Cavaliers in that regard.
Yes.
This is the kind of thing I was talking about the other day where – if LeBron James decides to leave Dan Gilbert again at the end of this season, after Gilbert gave him everything he wanted in terms of spending on free agency, going into the luxury tax hell, paying, and when it comes down to it, they are going to end up paying, I don't know, $45-50 million. They did it last year, I want to say $45-50 million in luxury tax bills, and this year it's going to be very similar. When it's all said and
probably
done,
a little more because the repeater factor kicks in now.
The repeater factor will kick in for both years, 2017 and 18, and then next year, 2016 and 17, and then next year, 2017-18, is how that's going to go. So you're right. It's going to be a lot more than that. But Dan Gilbert is being hammered now for not wanting to pay a general manager like Chauncey Billups, or he would be technically the president of basketball ops, and then perceivably or conceivably or very likely, shorter word, more direct, he would have to hire a general manager, which is now a few more million out of the pocket of out of Dan Gilbert. And some will say, what is this guy's problem? Why is he lowballing a guy like Chauncey Billups after lowballing a guy like David Griffin out of his job? Well, maybe this is part of the reason. The Cavaliers had a payroll in 2016-2017, the season just completed, of $121 million. Massive. They got a $45 million luxury tax bill on top of that. LeBron James isn't cheap. Kyrie Irving doesn't play for free. Kevin Love makes a lot of money. Tristan Thompson got way more money than he should have. Iman Shumpert, J.R. Smith, very, very expensive. Cavaliers are going to trigger the oppressive repeater tax next season, which will increase its luxury tax bill by another 44%. And again, the way that's triggered, for those who don't know, if you are in the luxury tax in three of the four previous seasons, that's when the repeater kicks in. So this will be it for 2017-18 and 2018-19. I think I was off in my years there, is how that will work over the next 2 years. So Gilbert paid $166 million then for this roster that made the NBA Finals. Now, while nobody knows the exact amount of revenue that they brought in, the estimate, according to Forbes, is that the Cavaliers probably lost $40 million in 2016-2017. Despite winning the championship last year, going back to the finals this year, they're losing $40 million a year, roughly. That's despite 20,562 or whatever it is that the queue holds, selling out every night with LeBron James there in the big three and on down the line. Selling it out, selling merchandise, LeBron jerseys are among the top selling in the league. I think it was number two behind Steph Curry. It was just announced yesterday. Curry's jersey sold more than LeBron's, then Durant's, and then I want to say Kyrie's was either fourth or fifth because they had two of the top five. Cavaliers make a percentage of all of those things, obviously. Despite all of the revenue, they lost some $40 million in salary. Or not in salary, excuse me, $40 million just in net business losses. I don't care how rich you are, and Dan Gilbert is a multi-billionaire, primarily because of Quicken Loans, obviously. But nobody runs a business with the goal of losing $40 million a year. I don't care if you make iPhones, watches, or basketball teams. You don't run a business to lose $40 million a year. Pretty soon, you do that 3 years in a row, it's $120 million. And you know, I just said you're a multi-billionaire, but you keep that up long enough, you're not anymore. So nobody is liking that. But he did this for LeBron James. Guy signed all these guys that LeBron James wanted. And now, and of course, he's still paying, I want to say, three coaches. Isn't he just now finishing off paying Mike Brown?
Sadly, I think you're right about that.
I think he was paying Mike Brown through this year. I could be wrong, but it might even be another year. Hell, David Blatt is still being paid by Dan Gilbert to not coach them. And Tyronn Lue got a big raise, who's being paid to coach them. So can you truly blame him for lowballing David Griffin if he doesn't believe that David Griffin was the reason why this roster was put together anyway? Because LeBron is the one who did all the recruiting, and LeBron is the one who kind of made all the decisions. So maybe he figured, I can't pay this guy more than that. And now to get his replacement, Chauncey Billups, I'm going to pay him about what I was paying Griffin because I ain't paying for that much money for that position. Especially one in which GMs and player personnel directors are finding themselves to be farther and farther away from the deals that make champions. Because think about it for just a moment. Who brought Kevin Durant to Golden State to ensure another championship? It wasn't the GM. It wasn't even Jerry West. It was Steph Curry. It was Klay Thompson or Draymond Green who put a full court press on LeBron James, on Kevin Durant, said, come on, Kev. Players are deciding their locations. Players are now deciding where they move and what teams they play for. Players are now, it's a player-driven league more than ever before. The players are doing the recruiting. GMs have a much smaller role. If the GM or president of basketball ops role mattered so damn much, why did the Knicks suck as badly as they have for the entirety of the Phil Jackson era? Phil Jackson made $10 to $12 million to run the Knicks into the ground. So Dan Gilbert might be sitting there saying, why should I pay Chauncey Billups, you know, $4 million? Because he's not going to be the answer. The real answer is going to be, can we get our players to recruit other players to come here and play with us and keep this thing growing and building until LeBron finally retires? Is he going to stay anyway? Because that's the bottom line. If LeBron James has decided to leave, what difference would it make if Dan Gilbert is paying Chauncey Billups $5 million a year to run a team because he's not going to be able to recruit a soul to come to Cleveland with LeBron gone? It's not a destination. It's not a marquee city. So while people are going to, and perhaps rightly, criticize Gilbert for being cheap on the GM, you can't call him cheap at all. $166 million payroll, counting the luxury tax. Can't call him cheap. But when it comes to this particular position, squeezing nickels when it comes to the GM position, you kind of can understand a little bit of why he does it. It does make at least a little bit of sense. All right, so we're going to get into all of that. So much. Let me just run it down for you. Here's what I got. I got David Fernandez, DetroitBadBoys.com. We're going to talk about the Pistons move, the signing. We're going to talk about the rumors and the potential trades, et cetera. That'll be at 3:35. At 4:05, we go baseball style and we stay in the D. Ashley McClendon of BlessYouBoys.com, that's an SB Nation Tigers site. Who's getting traded from Detroit? Who's not? Cubs have some interest in some guys. We'll talk about that. Other guys maybe kind of wish they were on the block because they would like to go and play for somebody who's more of a contender. We're going to get into that with Ashley McClendon. And we're going to talk a little bit about a couple of stories that I find very interesting. One from tennis, one from golf, Rory McIlroy and Steve Elkington. Very, very curious. And D'Angelo Williams, a strange NBA or NFL story that has nothing to do with rosters and nothing to do with championships. It has everything to do with rules. and get into that story as well. So we have a ton to do over the course of the next 90 minutes. Want you to be a part of it at 866-240-1065. I also want to send you to see the Marathon Classic at Highland Meadows later on this month, July 17th to the 23rd. I got a four-pack of any-day ground passes to caller 5 right now at 866-240-1065. Want to go to the Classic on us? Dial it up. Caller 5, 866-240-1065, and we...
Now back to the Bob France Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
From the beginning of it, it sounds like with KCP, they were almost painted into a corner of what they could offer, but when the Galloway opportunity came up, they maybe jumped at that a little bit too quickly or maybe paid a little bit too much to avoid some of these hairy situations that they find themselves in now?
Yeah, you think so? yeah, I think they jumped a little bit too quickly. I don't think it's going to be a deal that is worth its weight in $21 million. Let's talk a little more NBA free agency. Let's talk about the trading block. Let's talk about all of it. We'll start in the D and talk to David Fernandez. He is with DetroitBadBoys.com, covering those Pistons for that SB Nation website. And he joins us now right here in Toledo on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Hey, David, how are you?
Hey, how's it going?
It's going good, man. Thanks for spending the time with us. What can you tell, before we get into the signing of Galloway, and it's for what it's worth, and I'm not overly excited about it, talk to us about KCP and where things are and where you think they should be at this particular point in time.
So right now, it seems like the Pistons are kind of playing a waiting game, really sort of seeing what the market's going to do. There's only a couple of teams with the flex or the cap space and a open starting shooting guard roster spot that are kind of in play. So it's sort of, honestly, it's right now, I think next steps to fall are going to see what Washington does with Otto Porter, because the Brooklyn Nets just signed him to a max offer sheet, and they have a couple of days to match that. So once those dominoes fall, I think you'll start to see some movement out of Detroit.
What do you make of Otto Porter getting a max offer sheet from a team like Brooklyn, or from anybody for that matter? It's a 13 points per game guy in his 2 years. A lot of people kind of looked at him and thought, really, very underperforming, very underachieving, kind of a bust, really, considering where he was taken and what was expected, and suddenly he's a max player. What does that say about the state of the league right now? The fact that a guy like J.J. Redick is $23 million. The fact that Gordon Hayward, even though he's an all-star, he is not a superstar. He's a solid player. He's not in LeBron or KD's or Russell's or Steph's or any of their leagues, and he's a $31-plus, $32 million a year guy now. The contracts are just outrageous, and you're right. I can certainly see why everybody's waiting to see what happens with Porter and what Washington does with him before somebody like KCP gets his deal done.
Yeah, so, I mean, just in general, I think it's just kind of a symptom of the cap space going, or the cap spike going up with all the, you know, the new TV deal that was signed last year.
Yep.
You know, really automatically led to even worse contracts that you would see last year that I think are going to be a little bit more regrettable. Now you're starting to see a slightly more sobering kind of process. That's why you only see J.J. Redick signing like a one-year deal. But these are talented players, and talented players are at a premium. You know, you look at Otto Porter just in general. You know, he's a guy that has shown steady improvement throughout his career. Yeah, earlier on he did kind of come across like a bust, like I think he was the third overall pick.
Yeah.
But he has shown a lot of steady improvement and shown that he's a very capable, you know, two-way player at a very important spot. And Gordon Hayward, you know, what I hear around the league is just generally speaking that he's seen as right up there with a Paul George and a Jimmy Butler. So and he's done a lot of great things for that Utah Jazz organization. So, and it makes sense. You know, Boston has the window to kind of attack now, but they can also sort of hold back on their cards a little bit. So they're in a good spot with that signing, in my opinion. And yeah, it's just a testament to the amount of money that entered the league after that new TV deal.
You know, it's one thing for there to be a lot more money available in cap space because of that TV deal, and teams are obviously allowed to get a lot bigger max contracts, et cetera, players, I should say. And if you are a team that is a championship contender, and that, of course, is a very difficult thing to be today, because I still think today most people would say the same thing is going to happen next June. It's going to be the Cavaliers and the Warriors going at it again, because neither team is going to be challenged realistically in their conference. But let's say you are a team that is a contender to perhaps, you know, either compete for or win a championship. That would be one thing, to be up over that salary cap and go into the luxury cap world. How in the world can the Pistons find themselves in that position? They use that full mid-level exception on Langston Galloway, a seven-point-a-game career scorer thus far, going to be with his fifth team in 4 years. And they're pushing up on the $99 million or whatever the exact number is, salary cap, and could end up kicking themselves into the luxury tax as well. If you're a 12, 11, or 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 seed in your conference, for crying out loud, I'm kind of thinking you shouldn't be anywhere near the salary cap, and you ought to, or the luxury tax, and you ought to be able to have a lot more flexibility to sign guys.
Yeah, it's just a premium for players that are kind of ready to play now. It's just something that you see a lot of teams. A couple of years ago, you were starting to see more teams that were just kind of playing that, all right, let's tank while we can type of thing and really play the long game. I think that type of mentality has kind of, it's not necessarily ran its course, but if you're a mid-level team and you want to put bodies in the seats, you want to, you know, be a playoff team, especially like a team like Detroit who is, you know, starting their new season at Little Caesars Arena
right
next year, you want to make the playoffs. And with these owners, they're willing to pay that type of money. First of all, they're all billionaires. Second of all, they are, they want to make money on the team, on their investment that they have right now. And you're willing to do, you know, things like that, like flirt with the luxury tax, which, yes, the Pistons are one of those teams, but we're going to start to see, especially after next summer, a lot of teams are going to be either at that level or, you know, flirting with that luxury tax line anyways.
Yeah, and I guess I understand it to an extent, I guess, but part of me just says if you're going to be in that territory, it better be worth your while. You better be getting some bang for your bucks. The Pistons are unique because of the new arena. That matters a little bit. You certainly want to make it, even if it's going to cost you more. But you're at, and I'm trying to find the numbers now, they're at about $105 million in contracts before they deal with KCP. And the tax kicks in at $119, if I have those numbers right. I expect to be not only in the playoffs, but winning a playoff series. If I'm the owner of the Pistons, and I'm going to be up in that neighborhood, I expect to be winning a playoff series and not just, hey, happy to be here as we get swept in the first round the way they did two seasons ago.
I agree with that. You know, I think that's kind of the scary thing when you look at, like, a KCP situation, and if you do have to trade away salary to match a max offer sheet. That is a little bit scary. You do see a little bit with other teams, though. They are signing shorter deals. Even with Kyle Lowry, he signed a 3-year deal. You used to look at, you know, like I said earlier, JJ Redick, he signed a 1-year deal. They're not really going the long term. They're just, you know, they're spending money immediately. Now, what my whole counterpoint to the, you know, how much are you willing to spend? With your team like Detroit, you don't get free agents. You don't get, you know, unrestricted free agents to sign to Detroit that are very high quality players very often. I was actually having a conversation about this yesterday. In the past 10 plus years, 15 plus years even, you look at the free agents that they brought in that weren't unrestricted free agents, or that were unrestricted free agents, excuse me. You look at Josh Smith, you look at Ben Gordon, you look at Charlie Villanueva, you look at Chauncey Billups when he was kind of a reclamation project. So they don't get the most high quality guys to come in through the door. So you tend to overpay your guys that you have signed or that you have drafted or that you had acquired in a trade, just because it's hard to get those types of players if you're in Detroit compared to, you know, for Cleveland, it's a little bit different because they have a LeBron James there, but other teams don't have that luxury when you look at like the Memphises and the
sure.
Detroits and teams that don't get the sort of, you know, bang for your buck superstars once they hit free agency.
We're talking to David Fernandez of DetroitBadBoys.com, talking about the Pistons and all things NBA trade and free agency related. What do you make of the Langston Galloway? Wow, there's a blast in the past, literally. Langston Galloway signing. As I mentioned, he's a 7-8 point a game career scorer. He's going into his fourth season. He'll be with his fifth team. How does he fit with this particular rotation that Stan wants to roll out?
I mean, with Galloway, I'm a little concerned if that $7 million a year is going to truly affect their ability to pay KCP, because I would much prefer having Kentavious Caldwell-Pope come back at, you know, hopefully a deal under the max. So that's my first thought with it. But him as a player, I think he's a career 36% three-point shooter. Last year he shot 39%, which would have been tops on the team, on the Detroit Pistons. He is a strong defender for sure, especially at the point guard spot where the Pistons have, you know, some pretty weak defensive players. You look at Reggie Jackson, who gets inhaled by screens. You look at a guy like Ish Smith, who's a bit undersized, a little bit smaller in frame. Galloway's a really strong defensive player. He ranks 97th percentile in synergy defense. He's a plus rating for team rating when he's on the floor in his past 2 years. So he does bring things that Detroit desperately needs, but at the end of the day, you're right. He is like a 7 points per game type of player. He's not going to truly move the needle. He's probably not going to move you up two or three spots in the rankings, but he does address some needs for Detroit. I'm just concerned how that will affect the whole Contavious Caldwell-Pope situation.
Yeah, obviously. That's the biggest concern as far as the roster goes. Forget about the rotation on the court. And by the way, you know, you're right about the 36% career, which is not a terrible number, and last year being 39%. But he's taken, you know, this isn't a volume guy. This is, you know, on three shots a game in his career. He's taken three three-pointers a game. So he's, you know, 1.3 for 3.5. So it's not like it's going to be a big a big volume that gets you that 36%, which results in a 15-point-per-game score. David Fernandez is our guest from DetroitBadBoys.com. Our man Jim Cushlin is on the scene as well. He's got a question for you. Go ahead, Jimmy.
Yeah, and looking at all this stuff, the whole case, you mentioned it even in your answer just now, David, that this may hinder, especially if somebody puts an offer sheet of a max deal, which is still in the possible grumblings. Again, I have to figure out what the Nets and Otto Porter end up doing. Number one, if that offer sheet comes in, would the Pistons still match that? Or if they don't, because they're worried about all these numbers, if they don't, what are their options at that point? Because they'd still be over the cap anyway.
So if a max offer sheet comes in immediately and they wanted to match, they have to trade. They're already at the cap. You know, they're not. Yeah. They're at the hard cap. They literally wouldn't be able to offer any more money than about $16, $17 million a year right now. So they would have to offload a Marcus Morris, a John Lohr, an Ish Smith, or like a Boban. They'd have to get rid of one of those contracts to even be able to match if a Brooklyn is able to make that offer. You look at another situation that is a little bit tempting that I could see happen would be a sign-and-trade situation with the Atlanta Hawks, who do have that type of money. Now, obviously, it would necessitate the Hawks wanting to sign Contavious Caldwell-Pope. He is from Georgia. They do have an open starting shooting guard position, and they do have the money. Then that would eventually bring back Tim Hardaway Jr. back to Detroit. He'd be working under his dad. He'd be back in Michigan. That's a situation that's been thrown out there that could be a possibility as well. Another situation is he walks, and then you just open up the cap space, and you just kind of let him go at that rate. Just because you're not either able to make a trade to offload an Ish Smith or a Boban, or you're just not willing to, and, you know, they might not value him as highly as, you know, some of us at Detroit Bad Boys do. The last situation would be that Contavious Caldwell-Pope does exactly what Greg Monroe did. He signs a qualifying offer for about $5, $6 million this year, and he just completely bets on himself next year to become an unrestricted free agent.
David Fernandez joining us talking Pistons and NBA. Let's talk about some of the other moves that were made outside of – well, no, I'm sorry. One more question. Earlier on in this period, there were some goofy rumors about DeAndre Jordan and Andre Drummond, two names that often people confuse with one another, and two very similar players in terms of their rebounding prowess, et cetera, et cetera. Is Stan Van Gundy happy with Andre Drummond being in Detroit and with the money that he is making, or is that something that he and they would like to get out from under and pursue a different type of use for that money?
It's kind of hard to tell. Stan Van Gundy said it so many times where he said that no player on this team is expendable. Every single player is tradable. Or all players are expendable, and none of them are not tradable. Mm-hmm. And he's been, you know, that name's been thrown around. It was thrown around at the trade deadline last year. Andre Drummond's name's been thrown around going into the draft this year. I think if he really likes a deal, he's willing to make that move. But he's not gonna just take a loss and, you know, pick up, you know, busted salary like a Timothy Mozgov or something like that. He's not going to lose a deal. He still values Drummond, in my opinion, but you really do need to see a step up in shot selection, in defensive energy, not even defensive ability, but there's some serious areas where Andre Drummond needs to improve. And I think, just generally speaking, Stan Van Gundy's always seemed just a little bit lukewarm. I think he loves the talent, he loves the upside, but the production, it's kind of there, but sometimes the energy and sometimes the emotions just don't seem to be in check.
Fair enough, and I think those are all very, very valid observations, and I think if Stan Van is looking that way, I think those are good reasons why. I like Andre Drummond a lot, too, for what he does well, but the things that he doesn't do well need to be improved upon. Nobody's saying he's ever going to be, you know, a 22 and a point-a-game scorer with better shot selection and so on and so forth, but they do need more than what they're getting. All right, David, let's talk about some of the other things around the league. What did you make of Paul George going from Indiana to Oklahoma City on both ends? Did Indiana, knowing, and a little bit handcuffed, of course, because everybody knows Paul George is on a one-year deal that's left, and it could be a rental situation, so they're not going to be able to demand the moon and the stars for Paul George, but did they get enough from OKC? And then on the flip side, over there, will it work in OKC? Paul George, Russell Westbrook, Andre Roberson just re-signed, by the way, to a long-term deal. Is OKC a legitimate threat in the West to be beaten by the Warriors in the, and that's how I'm going to phrase everything, in the West, to be beaten by the Warriors in the Western Conference Finals? Are they better now?
Oh, they're definitely better now. They have a secondary scoring option, which is huge. Is their window any better than it was when they had Kevin Durant? I don't think so. I mean, you add Paul George, who's an excellent player. He's, you know, arguably a top 10 player, but he's still not better than Kevin Durant. So they'd still have to kind of figure out some rhythmic types of things on the court to truly be a threat. I think they're, going to be a step up defensively than they were last season too, just because Paul George is an underrated defensive player, in my opinion. So they've made the right move. Can they beat the Warriors at full strength? I don't think so.
What about Indiana? Because, you know, that move, of course, was one of many that had top players in the East going to the West. There weren't that many top players in the East in the first place. But, of course, Jimmy Butler going to Minnesota now is another one. Gordon Hayward is the only one who came from the West East, and he's not on the level of those guys. He's not Paul George, in my opinion. He's not as good as Jimmy Butler on both ends of the floor, in my opinion, and clearly he's not one of the, you know, top 10 players in the world. But he's a star player. He was an all-star player for Utah. Now he's in Boston. So when you look at how weak Indiana got because of that move, you look at what Chicago just essentially threw in the towel because of that move. Boston got a little bit better. But how do you kind of rank the overall strength of those Eastern Conference? Let's put it that way. Is this still a cakewalk for the Cavaliers to yet another NBA Finals, even if they don't change one thing about their roster?
Yeah, it should be. If they're at full strength as well, I can't imagine that Boston would be the best team with the acquisition of Gordon Hayward. You look at Toronto Raptors, they just ran it back. And they really haven't proven much other than, sweaty palms when it comes to the playoffs. I think the Wizards are a strong team. I think they're a little underrated, and same can kind of go can be said for the Milwaukee Bucks, especially if Giannis is able to keep improving and improving and improving. But generally speaking, I still don't think any of those teams can stop LeBron James, Kyrie Irving, and Kevin Love. That's just too much talent, and that's too much LeBron James for any team in the East. What I think about those trades for the teams coming back, you know, when you look at Indiana, what they were able to grab, what you get from the Bulls for Jimmy Butler, I think the Indiana trade looks disastrous for the Pacers. They didn't get any assets other than Victor Oladipo, who we're starting to see what he actually is in the NBA. Sabonis, you know, he's looked pretty good, but he's still, you know, he's not much of a game changer. At least the Bulls were able to get a draft pick. Zach LaVine, who was a 20-point scorer last season. I know he is coming off the ACL, but that trade looks a little bit better. Both of these trades, in my opinion, make that DeMarcus Cousins trade from the trade deadline look a lot better than it did at that time. I think it's just kind of crazy to see the value that the current, you know, upper echelon players are getting in return for their trades. But no, I think Indiana's deal was pretty disastrous, which is good for Detroit and for Cleveland for sure.
No, no question about that. What do you make of the imbalance for the overall health of the league? I saw a story today, which I found very interesting. You could credibly make two NBA All-Star teams from the Western Conference that would both be better than an All-Star team from the Eastern Conference. And that's saying something. The second best group of Western players, Western Conference players, would be better than the first group of the Eastern Conference players. Now, it's a matter of opinion and stuff, but the fact that you could even have that argument and that debate says something. Is this a varsity out West in the JVs in the East, and it's going to be reflected that way as the season goes on, making it perhaps even more irrelevant than ever before?
Yeah, I think just frankly, yes. It's been like this for such a long time. The only caveats that you can have pretty much are the Detroit Pistons from, you know, the 03 to 06 stretch. You look at all of those LeBron James teams, those were real threats. But other than that, I guess that Magic team was pretty good, but it's been so, so West heavy with going back to those Lakers teams and, the Spurs. And now the West right now just looks like, it just looks like a Western gun show. It's kind of crazy how many weapons are over there and how many strong players. You know, look at Paul Millsap, Jimmy Butler, Paul George, all those guys just moved west. It's really going to be reflective in the quality of the playoffs. I think the Western Conference playoffs are going to be outstanding next year. It's going to be a brawl between those teams. Out East, yeah, it's looking pretty bleak, and it seems like a lot of teams are going to be able to compete for playoff spots.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. You know, you mentioned Paul George just kind of in passing as one of the top 10 players in the NBA. Do you agree with that for real, or was that just kind of like, well, he's in that neighborhood? I was just in the course of the NBA's All-NBA announcement, you know, when they had their award ceremony just a week or so ago, and you look at the All-NBA first, second, and third teams and so on. Who are the NBA's 10 best players when you say this guy's top 10? Because we say it about 15 or 20 guys. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And Jim Cushlin, feel free to weigh in on this as well, but I'm just going to throw names at you and figure out who the top 10 are. I think we can all agree that LeBron, Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, Kawhi Leonard, and Russell Westbrook are locks. That's already now 5 of the 10. 2, 4, 5 of the 10. James Harden, is he one of those top 10, or are you all in agreement on him?
Sure.
Yeah, I'm in agreement. I thought he should have won the MVP twice by now. I thought he deserved it over Steph Curry's first, and I thought he deserved it last year.
I thought he deserved it this past year as well.
So I'm definitely putting Harden in there.
That's 6. Anthony Davis?
The thing that his skill there is there, but he's led his team to the playoffs once and they got swept. So it's kind of hard for me if you're not able to lead your team and elevate your team to at least a playoff victory or at least even a competitive series.
Right.
I can't really put him in there, and I don't think that the Pelicans are going to make the playoffs next year. I think the skill's there. I just don't think for whatever reason that he would go in there.
You think the boogie combo is not going to get anything done, huh?
Not after this free agency period and all those players moving west. I don't think so.
Kush, is he on that list for you for top 10?
He'd be closer to number 10, because that's a very good point by David right there. We tend to and should measure by playoff things at times, especially with how many teams usually make the playoffs and so on. So, yeah, Anthony Davis, having only been to the playoffs once with 0 playoff wins, at some point soon that's got to start counting against him.
All right, I'm gonna give you guys 6 more names, and you can add or subtract from it as you wish, because we're looking for 4 for these final to finish out the top 10. Anthony Davis's name is there. Paul George's name is there. Kyrie Irving's name is there. John Wall's name is there. Jimmy Butler's name is there. Karl Anthony Towns, as far as I'm concerned, his name should be there. 25 points and 13 rebounds a game, for God's sake. The man is a man-child, and he's just getting started. Add or subtract to that list and find 4, and I'll let you, David, since you're our guest, go first. Which of those 4, or is there somebody that I missed? And I can think of one off the top of my head already, and Giannis Antetokounmpo as potentially one of the top 10 talents in this league right now as well. But where would you go?
That's a tough question. Just off the top of my head, I think Paul George is there just because I think he has kind of an X factor to him with offensively speaking, defensively speaking, and having at least shown some grit in the playoffs. I'm not going to put Kyrie up there. I think he's more of an offensive player than he is a full range player. I think Giannis might have crept into that conversation, especially after the playoffs last year, where he was looked like an absolute force and like the next superstar.
Two to go.
John Wall. Yeah, I think he's one of the better two-way players as well. He's one of the best defensive point guards in the league. And I guess lastly, I think I'm going to put Klay Thompson up there just because I think he's one of the best shooters in the league in this past postseason and in the finals. Elevate his game defensively, where he was the best perimeter defender on the floor last in the finals, in my opinion. Really stifling Kyrie Irving.
I get it, but I have a hard time because I try to separate some of those guys out and say if they didn't have each other, can they carry a team? Would he be the number one scoring option in a 25, 28 point a game score on his own team and still be all of that? Or is the pressure not on him at all because Durant and Steph carry so much of that? So I got a hard time with that. So, but you've got the ones that we agreed upon through Harden, then you add Paul George, Giannis, Wall, and Klay Thompson. Kush, I know we're past our time here. It's 4:04, but real quick, any arguments with those?
Not really. I'm actually trying to scan through, see if I find anything, but right now I don't. I'm okay with some of that.
Yeah, John Wall does not make that for me because John Wall is absolutely not a clutch player, as we saw especially in that last game in the playoff series. This is a guy who has proven, in my estimation, to be a whole lot of skill and a whole lot of talent, but not a whole lot of clutch. And even though he might be a two-way player, if I've got a chance to win a game and in the fourth quarter, and I got Kyrie Irving standing over there and John Wall standing over there, I'm taking Kyrie Irving. I'm not going to penalize Anthony Davis for the team he's been on thus far yet. To me, he is, again, put him on another team, and I think this is a guy who does ridiculous things and can win multiple championships given the right circumstances. And I guess I'm okay with Paul George. This is what prompted the argument here, David. You said Paul George is a top 10 player in the world. I will put Giannis, and I will put Anthony Davis, and I will put Paul George in there among that top 10. And I think I would probably squeeze Kyrie in over John Wall, even though John Wall might be a better defensive player. Kyrie Irving is just an absolute witch who can carry games and win games by himself with fourth quarter takeovers, and that to me puts him in the top 10. But just so the next time somebody says he's a top 10 player in the league and it's like the 17th guy that we've said that about, I think we need to say, no, he's not really. Let's get a real top 10 here and get some sort of consensus on it. That's why I just wanted to have that fun with you. David, great work at DetroitBadBoys.com. Thanks for the conversation on the Pistons, and we'll talk to you again real soon.
All right, sounds good. Appreciate it.
You got it. Have a good one. All right, we are so late here. It's the top of the hour. Let's get a quick time out of here and come back, talk a little Tigers baseball and more right here on ESPN 106.5.
Boston was shopping three of their perimeter players around the league, but one place that they engaged in conversation today was with the Utah Jazz, where they can do a sign and trade agreement where Jay Crowder potentially could go back to Utah in exchange for Gordon Hayward. Gordon Hayward would have to sign off on a sign and trade. Given the acrimony in Salt Lake right now, the disappointment among their fans, it could potentially be something of a parting gift to them, because Crowder is probably the odd man out in Boston. I think his role is most impacted.
Now, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that I think they've closed the gap with the Cavs here, because I think adding Gordon Hayward's a great move, but I still think the Cavs have three outstanding players. But if the Cavs waver at all or have an injury, the Celtics are going to be there. They're going to be a much stronger contender to the Cavs with Gordon Hayward than they were before.
Well, the Cavs' number one target was Paul George, mm-hmm. and they had a deal with Denver and with Indiana that fell apart at the last minute. When I spoke to a source within the Cavs when that happened, their feedback was, well, guess what? We're still the class of the East. That's the way they tried to rationalize it to deal with the disappointment. Now, what do they say when this Gordon Hayward deal happens? They can't just have that standing anymore just to say that, oh, hey, we're still the three-time defending Eastern Conference champions. Now the team that they played in the Eastern Conference Finals has added probably the second biggest name to move in
right.
the offseason. I spoke to a prominent agent who's been dealing with the Cavs throughout the free agency process.
Yeah.
And basically, he's talking to two people right now, Kobe Altman, the assistant GM, and the owner, Dan Gilbert. Question is, will Dan Gilbert want to continue to have that Jerry Jones type of role as the season goes on, or does he absolutely need to find somebody else in place?
And even with extra base hits, I think we wound up with more extra base hits than they did, actually. Obviously, they hit the home run that got us, but we had a couple double plays that kind of bit us a little bit today. And with runners in scoring position, again, it kind of rose up to get us. You know, when you don't get them with the runners in scoring position, sometimes it adds up.
Hopefully we're in the process of narrowing down what's been causing the symptoms, and then that way we can get it corrected. And I'm confident we're on that path. He will not be with the team tonight. At this point, I don't have a clear time frame for when he'll return, but we expect that it will be at least a couple of days.
Felt pretty good the first couple innings. I think that was the same story 5-6 days ago. Kind of hit a bit of a wall there in between innings, and I got to do a better job of, you know, going back out there and continuing what I started with. Mentally, physically, whatever, I got to be able to get over that hump and make pitches when I have to.
It's just the way sports are now. It's the aberration the other way around, you know, for a player to stay with the organization for his whole career. The Jeters, the Chipper Joneses of the world. Ideally, you'd like that to happen. Unfortunately, I can control my own destiny. Kind of one of those things. If the organization thinks it's best for them, if I think it's best for me, you know, that's there's a lot of variables that go into it. Where there's smoke, there's fire. It's not, you know, completely out of the realm of possibility, obviously.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Truth of the matter is, there hasn't been enough smoke and fire coming from the right arm of Justin Verlander this year to make him as valuable as a trade partner, or a trade piece, I should say, than perhaps he could have been or would have been otherwise. Actually, you know what, Cushlin? And welcome to hour number two of the extravaganza. You know what's interesting? Were it not for the Indians, Verlander wouldn't be having a terrible year. His ERA against Cleveland right. this year is over 11. and against the rest of the America, or the rest of baseball, in his, 14 starts, his ERA against everybody else is around 3.5.
Yeah.
So he can thank the Indians for that ERA pushing up around 5 now. So the real question is how much trade value does Justin Verlander have at this stage of his career, and the rest of the Tigers as well? We switch to a little baseball talk this afternoon now as we continue on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Welcome Ashley McLennan to the program. Ashley is the deputy editor of BlessYouBoys.com. That's a Tigers SB Nation site. Joining us now not to talk about pennant races, unfortunately for the Tigers, but about trade deadline deals at the end of this month and which Tigers might bring the best prospect hauls back for a rebuild. Ashley, thanks for joining us. How are you?
Hey, thanks for having me on. I'm great. How about you guys?
Fantastic. Appreciate you spending some time with us, talking a little baseball. You know,
awesome.
Did you think we'd be here in the first week of July and maybe even really the last week of June that this team would be talking at this point about what pieces and parts they can trade off, high prices for younger prospects? Or did you think coming in on paper that this team was going to contend potentially for the division championship?
Oh, I 100% thought we were going to be contenders again this year. We do like a kind of breakdown where we estimate how many wins we think the team will get going
right.
into the season. And I went high. I was like 92 wins this year. We're going to do it. And because aside from Cameron Maben, the core group of the team was the same as it was last year. And that was a team that came within 2 games of the wild card. So for me, I'm like, with all of those pieces still in place, with these guys who played so well last year, I mean, Verlander was second for the Cy Young. Kinsler had his gold glove season. It was a great team. And everything seemed lined up to have another solid year, where the only thing we were missing was that center field piece, and we could platoon that with, you know, Jacoby Jones looking great in spring training, picking up Matuk from the Rays. I honestly thought we would have something going, and now here we are saying, how many of our vets can we sell and for how much?
Yeah, that's exactly where we are. Now, did you think they would win the division with those 92 wins?
No, I 100% thought the Cleveland Indians were going to take the division and then the Tigers would go for the wild card.
Yeah, 92 wins would have been 6 better than last year's 86, obviously. And I'm kind of with
– I was going pretty high.
Yeah, that was shooting pretty high. I'm with you part way. I thought they would be a contender for a wild card spot. I thought they would win in the high 80s, again, like last year's 86, maybe improve it by a couple to 88, and that might be enough to make them a factor, in large part for the reasons that you explained. A very good, solid veteran lineup that did some great things last year. You still had some holes in the bullpen that you knew were going to be problems, and you had to fill out the rotation. But I thought they had the potential to do that. So here we are. Jim Cushlin was in agreement, by the way, our producer, who predicted the season before. We didn't give actual win totals the way you did, and we all kind of thought they would be there. why were we all wrong, Ashley? What in the world did we misdiagnose or miscalculate here to be off so far that we're talking about trading off all of these pieces and parts in a team that really truly needs to get younger and deeper?
Well, it's kind of one of those like ephemeral things that you can't really pinpoint when everything kind of goes wrong all at the same time. Like, you start the season with JD on the DL with the fracture to his foot, and that was huge because he's been such a great offensive piece for the team. And you get Anibal, who was amazing in the latter half of spring training, looking like he could contend to be part of the rotation, and suddenly he falls apart even as a bullpen arm. You have Boyd, who like didn't give up a walk for most of spring training, falling apart in the rotation. You have Verlander, who's just, I mean, he's not been the JD of old, for sure. And Norris isn't living up to what any of us kind of expected he would do. I mean, Fulmer's been the ace of the team going this whole season so far. And then you got guys like your Miguel Cabreras, who you're kind of depending on for 40 home runs a season, and who's hit, I think, what, 11 so far?
Yeah, definitely a down season thus far, sure.
Yeah, that just aren't where you want them to be. And I don't think there's a way to pinpoint exactly what's causing that. Like, what I've noticed a lot of just watching the games is that the team itself just doesn't seem to be enjoying it the way they have in previous years, where you have stuff like, you know, goofy things like the goggles on thing that they were doing last season, or the suit and tie in the fielder era. Like, it was silly stuff, but it looked like they were having fun. It just, something is lacking in that team this year, and it's kind of a bummer to watch.
So, given the fact that they are such veterans for the most part, I mean, really, the guys who were the leaders of this team, the best players, are all longtime veterans, Miguel, Kinsler, Verlander, Victor Martinez, and so on and so forth. You wouldn't think they would need an uplift from a manager like Brad Ausmus as much as maybe a younger team might need that leadership. They should be leaders themselves. But I feel like everybody's going to end up pointing the finger at Brad Ausmus and saying, that's the thing that's missing that you're talking about here. Yeah, how much of this do you lay at his feet? And how much do you think ownership and Al Avila are going to lay at his feet and say, you know what, we need a change?
I think everybody's favorite thing to do is play the blame Ausmus game. But, I mean, he can only do so much with what he's given, and you get, you know, your injuries going and you get lackluster performances. And I think one of the major problems Brad has is that he's very rigid in how he approaches games. So he's very much I have a seventh inning guy, I have an eighth inning guy. And he likes to stretch out his starters longer than I think he maybe should. Like, I think we saw that especially he was giving Anibal Sanchez a lot too much time in innings and giving him the time to implode. Whereas I think now that we've come back, he's watching him a bit more closely. I don't think you can blame the season on Brad. And I know people are going to want to, because it's always easiest to blame the manager. Yeah. But, I mean, I don't know how much he's in there being the guiding force, or how much of him is like, I've kind of given up on this season too. But I don't know that he's responsible for it. I think he can only do so much with what he's given, and a lot of that falls on Al Avila. And, it's hard to create a villain in a season when there isn't really one to pick. It's just a lot of nothing is the problem. Like, there's no moves being made. People are sticking out with players that maybe they shouldn't for way too long, as opposed to DFAing them when the opportunity arises. And I think there was a lot of excitement coming out of spring training because it looked like they were making those big moves by dropping low, by dropping Pelfrey, and then suddenly nothing. And so I think it's just kind of stagnating, and because of that, you're just pointing fingers wherever you can.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say, too. Ashley McLennan is our guest. She is the deputy editor of Bless You Boys, the Tigers SB Nation website, talking about where the Tigers season kind of went off the rails in the first half, as we are now less than a week from the All-Star game, and we are just about 3 weeks away from the trading deadline. Jim Cushlin is with us as well, Ashley. He's got one for you, Jimmy.
First thing, there is at least some good news tucked into some of this, at least for today. The Tigers were a winner this afternoon, 6-8 over the suddenly lowly San Francisco Giants. So they did take 2 out of 3, so I guess small victories. But when it comes to Brad Ausmus, we were just talking about that, and I think one of the things a lot of Tigers fans do have issues with at times is maybe some of his decision-making in terms of bullpens and when to bring guys in. Some of the stuff you were touching on, well, I got an interesting decision that Brad Ausmus will have to make. Couldn't help but notice, because I was looking up the pitching matchups for this weekend, because it's another Indians-Tigers series, couldn't help but notice that Sunday is Michael Fulmer v. Corey Kluber. And, of course, that's the last game before the All-Star break. They still have that rule. If you're a starter and you start that day, you're not eligible to then appear in Tuesday's All-Star game. So just spitball it here. I'm wondering what Brad Ausmus is going to do with that, with Michael Fulmer being the only Tigers representative in the All-Star game. Do you think he puts somebody else in on Sunday so he can at least be there for more than just the pregame introductions? What do you think that they should do with that just because he's their only rep and he's slated to go on Sunday?
Oh, that's a tough call, because, I mean, with Kluber being the guy you face, you want to put up one of your best options, and Fulmer's been the rock-steady guy in the lineup, but he is also the only Tigers guy going to the All-Star game, and, I mean, he's coming off his Rookie of the Year season. It's a big moment for him, and he's had such a good start to the year. I if it were me, I would pull him and put somebody in. It's not like we're fighting for, you know, the number one spot in the division. It's not like beating the Indians is really going to do much for the season on a Sunday game. But I guess, you know, you got to see how it plays out, because now you have Norris on the DL, so you've already got to think about pulling somebody up because of that. I mean, they pulled up Blaine Hardy today, but he'll be a bullpen reliever, so do they bring up a Boyd just for a spot start, just to give Fulmer the chance to play in the game? It's hard to say what they'll do there. I would say to pull him and, you know, give him the chance to at least play an inning at the All-Star game.
Incidentally, and this is for you mostly, Bob, I think it's more 50-50 on Kluber, because he's already appeared in All-Star games, and the Indians have more than one rep. Obviously, they got 5.
I wouldn't mess with him. Have you seen what he has done? He has set now a franchise record.
That's the other factor as well.
Yeah, I mean, with all of these double-digit, is it 5 or 6 now? Is it 5 or 6 straight games of double-digit strikeouts?
It's 5 now.
He has just been lights out since coming back from the DL. I do not mess with him on rest. I do not mess, even though everybody rests over the All-Star break anyway, so he does get messed with a little bit. Give him that last start right on time in his rotation and let him go.
Because but I think it's just been spectacular. And I kind of agree with that. I just think it's a much more legitimate question to be asking if the Tigers would.
Yeah,
I really do, because
agree.
He's their only
because
rep.
He's the only one. Give them and the fans a little bit of something fun in a season that I don't think anybody is really invested in, anymore because of the way the standings are. Which brings us back to the issue, Ashley, about the trade value of some of the pieces and parts for this Tigers team. Let's talk about Justin Verlander first. ESPN's Buster Olney wrote about him yesterday, and I read this, that the Tigers are not messing around here with him.
They want to go full contract.
They want a quote, and this is ESPN again, big return without salary offset, end quote, is what they want for Justin Verlander. The question is a guy with an ERA right now at 4.96, is he, and then what is he, 33, I want to say, or 34?
34.
He's 34.
And he's getting paid $28 million for the next 2 years.
Right. Yeah.
Is he the kind of guy
that can bring you a big return without salary offset?
Yeah, it's a tough one because, I mean, it's Justin Verlander, right? You look at it, this is a guy, future Hall of Famer. He's career Detroit Tiger, you know, Cy Young winner, all-star, amazing pitcher, but he is 34. He's thrown over 2,400 innings in his career. He's getting old, I mean, by pitcher standards, by pitcher arm standards, and he is owed that monster contract. And the problem becomes is that he's, of course, also got full veto on any trade.
Sure.
So first you need a team that's willing to pay for him and pay in both the cost of his contract and possibly some return, because the Tigers aren't going to give him up for nothing. And then you have to have a team that he's going to agree to go to. And that's kind of a double-edged thing, because I'm sure sentimentally Justin Verlander would love to stay a Tiger for the rest of his career. He seems like a true org guy. He seems to love the team. But then the other part you have to think, he's 34. He's been pitching since 2006 full-time, and he doesn't have a ring. And how much time does he really have left to be a full-time starting pitcher and get that World Series? So if you look, and I mean, this is pure speculation. I don't know which teams would be willing, but somewhere like the Dodgers, somewhere like the Cubs, where they have the income to do that and the shot at winning, are those places that he's going to then be willing to go.
I would think that, as you point out, with all of the accomplishments he's had in his career, other than being a world champion, you would think that he would be more than willing to do that, to go to a team where he's got a real chance of pitching in meaningful postseason games. And you know what? Sometimes, you look at his record this year, and you got to say, well, come on, is that really Justin Verlander? Because last year he led the American League in strikeouts and had an ERA of 3.04 and was arguably, could have been the Cy Young winner, for goodness sakes. He's not that far off from that.
Oh, yeah, I think with his whip was just over one. Like, it was incredible.
Right. And so is this, did he fall off the table that quickly? Or might he be just like so many other guys on this team, and that is a little bit of a victim of his own team's, standings, and place in the standings, literally, and the face of where they are, or the fate of where they are. In other words, if he goes to a team that's a contender and is pitching in meaningful games, the adrenaline gets back up, the feeling of competitiveness gets back up, and maybe a team sees
the urgency
and says,
is there.
I'll make the deal and bring him here because we know he's going to be a lot better than that for us than he is right now for the Tigers, who are kind of buried. So
yeah, and I could see that absolutely being the case. Like, see somewhere, like, just, I mean, as much as it pains me to say the sentence, can you imagine a lineup that's Clayton Kershaw and then Justin Verlander?
Well, he wouldn't be second, because Alex Wood out there is 10-0, who's just struck out 10 more last night. Alex Wood is an unbelievable story out there, but how about sliding in Justin maybe right behind him, the way they're going out there?
Yeah,
right,
absolutely.
And
I mean, you put him in a lineup like the Cubs, I mean, they've got their share of struggles. Like, you've got, like, who did they just send down to the DL today? Was it Lackey just got sent down?
Yeah, right.
And
you'd have to
DL.
Think, too, there's a certain supermodel in this equation who probably wouldn't mind living in L.A., where a lot of what she does.
Well, they have a house in L.A.
There you go. So you see.
So, I mean, they already own property in the area.
I don't think you would veto a trade like that. Your piece today for BlessYouBoys.com, Ashley, you talk about some of the most likely to be traded. And we talked about Verlander, but let's get into the two that you highlighted, J.D. Martinez and Justin Wilson. Most likely to go, and what can they bring back?
Well, I mean, I'm not going to speculate on the prospects just because I hate to do it. But, okay. I mean, your highest opportunity, your best bet is J.D. Martinez. And I will be so shocked if he is still in a Tigers jersey come August 1st, if I'm totally honest. Because since coming back, he's just been insane. Like, he's got, like, a 1.015 OPS. He's a monster offensively. My only concern is that off the top of my head, I can't think of a contending team that's really, really in demand for an outfielder. Like, I'm sure there's some that could use a guy like him in their lineup regardless of where he goes, but I just don't see anybody there that's the pinpointed need that they have, like, desperately. So, I mean, it's hard to say where he will go, but because of how good he's been and because of the difference that he can make numbers-wise to a team offensively, I think it's a sure bet that he's gone.
And what about Justin Wilson? You mentioned him as well.
Well, Wilson, I think, is also, I'm not 100% sure that we'll lose Wilson, but because of the performance that he's put on, especially since moving to the closer role, he's just been fantastic this year, especially in a really spotty bullpen. I mean, he's had a couple of off games, but he's been a really dependable part of that pen. And there's a lot of teams out there where extra bullpen pieces that have that reliability are going to be huge, especially going into an off season where you rely so much on having your bullpen kind of make or break those games for you. Like, if you look at the division series last year between LA and the Nationals, you had to have Kershaw come in and close a game for them. Having more arms available to you is exactly what you want going into that kind of situation. So I think Wilson would be a really key piece for a contending team.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting guy, too, to look at. Jim Cushion's got a thought on this, too. Jimmy, go ahead.
Yeah, and another name I want to throw out there, you didn't mention your thing, but it did come up in a rumor over the weekend related to Verlander and the Cubs, and that they might be interested in an Alex Avila as well, who, of course, is having a great year. I thought, actually, when thinking of the Tigers roster last week, I kind of thought he might be their one representative as a backup catcher slot. He's actually had a good enough year to be considered for that.
I was surprised he wasn't.
Yeah, exactly. I kind of was a little bit too. But I can't really argue against Fulmer either. But he's a straight up normal free agent at the end of the year. And of course, it's been well documented the last week. The Cubs have a catching issue because of their one catcher who got sent away for bad mouthing the entire pitching staff, you know, to the media. So they have a catching hole. Even if Verlander's not involved, if it's somebody like the Cubs or somebody else, how likely is it that Alex Avila gets moved?
Actually, I've listed Avila pretty high in the article I wrote today as an almost certain candidate to move because of the season he's having right now. Like, comparatively, you look at his White Sox season, you look at his last season with the Tigers before that, he was a pretty subpar backup catcher. But this year, he's just been monstrous. Like, for the beginning part of the season, it looked as if he was going to overshadow James McCann as the starting catcher because of how good he was. And I actually wrote about the Cubs situation and how Avila would be an ideal candidate to fit in there because of them getting rid of Montero. Montero's now off to the Jays. And having a guy like Avila as a backup catcher in that lineup would just be huge for them. Like, he's got that pop in his bat, and he's hitting it hard. And I think based on their losing that, and they called up their guy from AAA whose name is escaping me right now, but he's not going to be a long-term solution for them for backup. And I kind of feel like Avila fits almost in that, like, David Ross kind of charming slot that the Cubs need. I think they need a veteran guy who can guide the younger players, and I think that Avila could fit in there for them, which feels funny to say because he's 31. But he does have that ability to help guide young pitchers especially, but there's a lot of young players on that team that I think could benefit from an evening tone that he could bring.
So Pierre Ashley McLennan of BlessYouBoys.com, into your crystal ball here, and let's say it is August 1st right now. Which Tigers are no longer Tigers on August 1st?
Alex Avila, J.D. Martinez, probably Justin Wilson. There's other guys in the mix, but I think those three for sure are gone. I think you may end up seeing a big, shocking, down-to-the-line blockbuster deal with Verlander, but it's not as likely as people are suggesting. And then I think a lot of people got hyped because they said everybody's fair game. But, I mean, guys like Miguel Cabrera, Victor Martinez, Zimmerman, Upton, their contracts are too big to move.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
So
some of them really, really are.
Guys are safe. Like,
yeah, and
there's no way.
A solid season anyway for you. You would think he would be a value to somebody, except for that contract. But, yeah, he's leading the team. I think, is he not leading the team in batting average, home runs, and RBIs right now? I think he's leading in three categories.
Maybe.
Yeah.
But, I mean, like they said, I think the FanRag article I read the other day said something that pointed out, like, why would he choose to opt out if he's guaranteed something like $22, $25 million a year?
Very good
over the remainder of his contract? Like, he wouldn't.
He's definitely not going to do that. Ashley McLennan, deputy editor of BlessYouBoys.com, a Detroit Tigers site on SB Nation, talking about the trade possibilities as we are 3 weeks away from the MLB trading deadline and less than a week away from the All-Star game. Ashley, thanks so much for your analysis and insight. We certainly appreciate it.
Awesome. Thanks for having me on, guys.
You got it. Have a great day. All right, there's Ashley McLennan. And, hey, congratulations to Dan Banks. He called last hour when we gave the number for the Marathon Classic. We've got all day. We got a four-pack of all-day ground passes to, or any day, I should say, ground passes to the Marathon Classic at Highland Meadows, which comes back July 17th to the 23rd. So Dan Banks is going. And guess what? I got another four-pack I'll give away right now, this time to caller six, caller number six. 866-240-1065, 866-240-1065. We will set you up with that same four-pack of any-day ground passes to the Marathon Classic. And we'll be right back right after this.
1065. Now back to the Bob France Extravaganza on 1065 The Ticket.
Rolling on, I should say, indeed, we are back. On ESPN 1065 The Ticket, we are Toledo Sports Leader. Phone lines are open to you if you've got something to say. We will let you say it, and then we may agree with you, or we may argue with you. We may do any one of the above or all of the above. 866-240-1065. By the way, that was also the number I gave you to call for a chance to win the Marathon Classic all-day ground pass or any-day ground passes. And Brandon Shantz of Wasion was paying attention, and he's got the latest four-pack. I've got more of those I'll give away on tomorrow's program, probably a couple pair tomorrow, as well as most of next week as well. I want to shift gears a little bit away from baseball and away from the NBA and all of the free agency, hot stove type activities going on. Oh, by the way, one other thing on that. Kush, you and I and David Fernandez from DetroitBadBoys.com mm-hmm. are talking about the top 10.
Yeah.
There are a couple of names I feel like I left out when, you know, just to consider them.
Okay.
From that list, we all agreed that LeBron, Durant, Kawhi, Steph Curry, and Russell Westbrook and James Harden were all locks. They're six of the top 10 players in the NBA.
And we did, yep.
And then we said, okay, what about the next four? Because we always say, well, he's a top 10 player. And you say it about 20 guys. You can't say it about 20 guys when there's only 10 spots. And so some of the names we came up with to include on that are Paul George, Giannis Antetokounmpo, John Wall, Klay Thompson, Anthony Davis, Karl-Anthony Towns, Kyrie Irving, Jimmy Butler. I forgot to say Isaiah Thomas, who was one of the leading scorers in the league this year. DeMarcus Cousins, arguably the best big man in the game. And what about veterans like Carmelo Anthony and Chris Paul? Are they still anywhere close to that list, or should we just cross them off?
Well, that's a good question. That's a good question. I mean, because, yeah, it's really those top six I think would be close to universally agreed upon right now.
Oh, I don't think anybody would say that any one of those is not one of
right.
the top ten.
Exactly.
Everybody would agree. They might not be one through six, by the way.
Right.
Somebody might say, I like, I don't know, let's say Anthony Davis, who is he was first team All NBA. Somebody might say, I like Anthony Davis above James Harden. So maybe Davis is six and Harden is nine. But nobody would say, I don't think any one of those six is out of the top 10. Agreed?
Yeah.
Okay. So they're locks. So then the question is from that other group, how do you measure big guys against little guys? It's an older guys, young guys. To me, Carmelo Anthony gets crossed off the list because he has been a very one-dimensional player for a long time. He's not getting any younger. He is not as dominant as he was when he was younger, the way LeBron James still is that dominant. So to me, you cross him off. But Chris Paul, since he's not really able to be compared to the Curry, Westbrook, Harden, Kyrie, Wall type of point guard, because he's a pass-first point guard and a traditional table-setting point guard. He's more Jason Kidd, except with a better jump shot, than he is, you know, Russell Westbrook. He's a guy that I still, if I'm doing this in reality, I've got him still very, very close to my top 10 because I think he's one of the, you know, three best point guards in the game, but it's just such a different kind of game that he plays that it's hard to compare to the shooters. Like Curry and Westbrook and Kyrie and Harden. So it's just tough, but I have them up there.
Yeah, you know, the way I'm looking at it, I do think Paul George right now. I think I personally, these are for the
adults. Yeah, I have a hard time with Paul George, though.
Yeah.
Because of the whole fourth quarter thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's so weird that, who's his shoe company? Is it Adidas?
I think
so.
Under Armour? I'd have to look which
whoever
one
it was who did the commercial toward the end of the playoffs. Yeah, Paul George, you know, no overtime tonight. This one ends right here. And it shows them making a game winner.
Yeah.
And it's just so funny because all it does is call attention to the fact that Paul George is like 0 for 16 in his career.
Right.
Winning a test with less than 3 seconds.
Which is something that non-Indiana fans learned during that first round series. I know that's when I really learned about that.
And now all Indiana fans, by the way, are happy to announce that because they don't like him anymore.
Right, of course. But I'm thinking, this is the debatable part, is these other four. And I kind of lean Paul George. Maybe my hometown bias is coming in because I too like Curry a little bit over Wall.
Well, you mean Kyrie.
Kyrie.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Kyrie. If I misspoke, it's a Curry.
Yeah,
I
you
meant
said Curry.
Kyrie.
Curry's already on this.
Yeah,
list.
My bad. I meant Kyrie.
No problem.
Over
but
Wall.
I think Anthony Davis would be almost universally accepted as one of the locks too. I think you have seven locks here, and Anthony Davis is one of them.
Yeah. So
I really
so the real debate then is Paul is in my case. You know, I'm leaning towards a Paul George, and Kyrie. So then it's that last spot, and you know, you make a good argument for including the Greek Freak on this list.
I mean,
like Kawhi, here's another guy who, when he first came up, he may not have put up those types of numbers in his first season or so. But, man, has he turned... I mean, he is the foundational block for Milwaukee, and he should be. He is
and
that
we
good.
We have seen him take over games
yep.
with his athleticism, not to be redundant with his nickname, but freakishly athletic.
Yeah.
That in ways that LeBron can do, and very few other guys can. Now, you might say he's got to get into the playoffs and win a playoff series, too, before he can do that, in the same way that David Fernandez said that about Anthony Davis. But I'll tell you what.
Although, if that's the criteria, by the by, the Greek Freak does have one thing over Anthony Davis, 2-0, technically speaking.
Well,
they lost
in,
that
in,
series
in
six.
Games. Right, in games, not in series, but in games. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, that's very, very true. What about Jimmy Butler, who just got moved to Minnesota, especially being a two-way player, because he's a you know
yeah.
he's a very underrated, although Paul George is, too, is an underrated
yeah.
defensive player.
Yeah, right
and
now
you've got
I'm leaning a little George.
Like Isaiah Thomas, who
yeah.
is kind of a liability at the other end because of his size. No fault of his, but it is, you know, just is what it is.
I lean a little towards Paul George, a little over Jimmy Butler, but it's so close once you're down here at number 10. It
yeah.
really is.
Yeah, I'll tell you what. Here's what I do. Here, you know, and there's probably some bias in it. I guess everybody's gonna have some bias in it, but I truly am trying not to be biased when I say Kyrie also. But for me, just for me, if somebody says top 10 players, if somebody says this guy's a top 10 player, I'm gonna say no, he's not, because he's not one of these 10 names. These are my top 10. Everybody has their own. David has his own. You have yours own. Your own. But I've got LeBron, Durant, not necessarily in this order. These are just
that's,
the 10.
Yeah, that's fine.
LeBron, Durant, Kawhi, Steph, Westbrook, Harden, Anthony Davis, Giannis Antetokounmpo, Paul George, I'll squeeze in, although I'm really, really hesitant because of, like I said, his late game stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And Kyrie Irving, who makes this because of his late game stuff.
Yes.
That's why Kyrie Irving, to me, is a top 10 player in this league. He's a closer, man. He is a flat-out finisher. And you can say, well, he wasn't a great defender. How many all-defensive teams did Magic Johnson make? I don't know, legitimately. I don't know.
I know, but it was minimal if he made any.
Exactly. Now, Michael Jordan, on the flip side, was All-NBA, like, probably 11 times and was Defensive Player of the Year. There are some guys who are great two-way players who did. But a lot of the greatest offensive players in the history of the planet, or history of the sport, were not great defensive players, and you don't knock them off of the list because of that. To me, today, in today's NBA, Kyrie makes it onto that top 10 because he is a closer. Exactly the opposite reason who did I just say is not on it? For goodness sakes, we're just talking about who is not on the
Wall?
List. Well, yeah, John Wall. That's it. No, I'm sorry. I was talking about Paul George, who did make
okay.
it, but despite his lack of late game heroics, Paul George makes the list, and because of his late-game heroics, Kyrie makes the list. But, yes, I mentioned when David was on with us that John Wall, who he had up there because he's a good two-way player, to me is exactly the opposite of what I want in a postseason game. And we saw that with his disappearing act. We saw that when he was 0 for 11 or whatever it was in the fourth quarter. This
yeah.
is a guy that, to me, is a lot more hype than he is substance. And that's not to say he stinks, because his substance is tremendous. But is he top 10 worthy? No. I'll give him that second tier. I'll give him maybe top 15. And if you really want to have some fun, good luck debating who is in the top 15. Who are the next five?
Actually, I like some of the names you were throwing out there, and for me, it actually
equals up to five. But
narrowing
it down to five, I mean.
Actually, to me, out of some of those names you threw out there, I'm narrowing it down to five with Isaiah, Chris Paul, Butler, Clay. I do like his shooting. He'd be number 15, and Wall.
I don't know if I can put Isaiah there, only because, like I said, the defense, and he has only had 1 year of this kind of scoring, you know, that he has done. I will put Butler.
Okay.
That's one. I will put Chris Paul. That's two. I will put Karl Anthony Towns, who is just an up-and-coming dominant star in this league, number three. I will put, do I want to go to the big man here? Because we don't have any real big men on this. Do I put DeMarcus Cousins there on talent alone, even though he's not necessarily a great teammate or a great winner? I might have him as a top 15 talent in this league. And then I might get to Klay Thompson like you with number 15. John Wall doesn't make this for me in the top 15 for some of the reasons I listed. Carmelo Anthony does not for some of the reasons I listed. And because of the defensive end, Isaiah Thomas, not yet either. I'll put all of them in the top 20, but not in the top 15. And that's
fair enough.
Where I would have to
come. Fair enough.
You know, and there's some other guys. You know, Damian Lillard is a, you know, Gordon Hayward. At what point do you start talking about players like Gordon Hayward, you know, who was an all-star but not an all-NBA guy. He's a 21-point-a-game scorer, something like that. He's now a $32 million player. At what point does he get listed here as well? At what point do you start talking about guys on lesser-known teams but that have had spectacular seasons and careers thus far, you know, as well? Because that's like Lillard in Portland. He's one of the best point guards, one of the best scorers. Never really talked about in the same breath with Curry, Kyrie, Westbrook, Harden, et cetera, among the other type of point guards. So guys like that have to be considered top 20.
Very true.
But they just can't crack into the top 15 and certainly not into my top 10.
Yeah.
So there's only 10 that you can go with.
One of those fun debates to have, that's for sure.
No question about it. And to me, I think it's kind of important because when we talk about player movement and we talk about salaries that are made, this is one of those things agents and analysts all talk about. Well, he's a top 10 player. He's a top 10 player in the league. Oh, my God, he's easily a top. And you can't say that about 20 guys. You can only say that about 10 guys. And everybody might have their 10, but you're going to have a hard time kicking any of those names off of the list that I just put together and we just put together. And that's not something that that I think should be easily, you know, trifled with. There are guys, there are star players like Kevin Love. Remember, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, when Kevin Love was averaging 25 and 12 or 13,
he
might have been on that list.
Yeah, he might have been on somebody's top 15, sure, just because of those numbers alone.
But because he was willing to diminish his own role, shrink his own role and join a big three in which he was going to be the third scoring option. You know, now he's 21 and maybe 11 a game or 12 a game or whatever he is averaging. And it's just not standing out as much as the other games. The way it is for, by the way, ironically, you know, his replacement in Minnesota, which is Karl Anthony Towns, who's a 25 and 12 guy. And he's got a lot more help now, especially since Butler is coming over and with Andrew Wiggins kind of coming into his own as well. But there's a lot of guys there that you have to give credit to because of their stats, even if they're not necessarily playing for championships or playoff victories right now, that still are top 10 talents in this league. And I think we've kind of narrowed it down. And by the way, you notice who did not come anywhere close to my top 20?
Melo.
Draymond Green.
Or
Draymond Green is in a lot of people's top 20. They feel like NBA's Defensive Player of the Year has to be even a top 10 or a top 15. Sorry, he is very much a rather than a victim of circumstance, how do you phrase that? What's the opposite of a victim of his own circumstances? He is fortunate. He is a fortunate son in the circumstances he finds himself in.
You know,
if he was playing on a lesser team with lesser stars around him, he would not be anything more than an average basketball player.
No, and we've gone over this, Bob, and I completely agree with that. If he was the number one or number two option on a totally different team, it would not work out for him or that team. The only positive that I give him is there is just something about his role in Golden State. You've heard me make this argument for a couple of years that he's the cog that makes that engine go. To me, it's still not completely a coincidence.
Well, yes,
right. To me, it's not completely.
He is still a role player.
Yes, yes, yes. That's the point we're here trying to make.
Without, you know, and that's the difference. Superstars are not role players.
Right.
They will be stars on any team.
Right.
Role players and they have to play the role on the right team. And that's why Draymond Green is not a superstar.
Right.
Because he could not be that good on most other teams.
I agree. It's just the only positive I give him is I think his insertion into the starting lineup in Steve Kerr's first year, which is now three seasons ago, that was the one move that turned them into, because they already had Klay and Steph at that point, into the Warriors that we now know them as.
Right.
Could he do it on his own on a totally different team? No.
I did not get to the NFL story, the golf story, or the tennis story that I wanted. You know what we're going to do, though? Because tomorrow's a free-for-all Friday, we clean up the mess. Everything we didn't get to that we wanted to, we do it on free-for-all Friday. The topics are wide, varied, and flowing, and we want you to be a part of them. So tomorrow, join us for the Friday free-for-all right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. But stay where you are right now as well, because drive time is coming up next. We'll see you tomorrow. Bye-bye.